In 1932, a team of academics from Harvard University arrived in the what was known then as the Irish Free State to begin a major archaeological and anthropological investigation. Welcomed and supported by the government, the Harvard team had a remarkable objective. It sought to determine the racial and cultural heritage of the Irish people. The Harvard research project had many strands. It involved countrywide excavations and the examination of prehistoric skulls, along with the physical examinations of thousands of Irish people, measuring skulls, nose shape, and grade of hair colour. Though the Harvard project proved to be hugely influential, it was a product of its time, a particularly dangerous time in European and world history. Underpinning the project were theories of eugenics that would subsequently be exposed as racist and pseudoscientific. I'm joined by Dr. Mairead Carew, archaeologist and author, whose book The Quest for the Irish Celt contextualises the extraordinary story of Harvard University's five-year mission to Ireland during the 1930s. Mairead, you're very welcome back to the History Show. Why did Harvard University choose Ireland for this research mission?
Well, first of all, in 1930, Owen McNeill did a tour of American universities, which included Harvard, in an effort to promote Celtic studies and also to attract funding for Celtic research in Ireland. Ernest A. Houghton, he was the manager of the survey. One of the reasons he gave for involving himself in it was that Celtic, you know, the Irish language, was an ancient Aryan language once spoken all over Europe. And also that the Celts were important to American Celtic heritage, and Irish people in America were very interested in their Celtic roots in old Europe, outside of Greece and Rome.
And Irish people in America, or Irish Americans in the 1930s, would have becoming far more prominent, and they would have certainly further up the social scale than they would have been in the 1870s and 1880s, for example.
For example, Hugh O'Neill Henken, he was the director of the excavations. He was of Irish and German extraction, and his grandfather had emigrated to New York, and by 1931 he was a curator of European archaeology in the Peabody Museum at Harvard.
And also at around this time you would have had a change of government. The Cumann na Gael government in 1932 are out of office.
Yeah.
De Valera and Fianna Fáil are now in power, and the government welcomes this Harvard team with open arms, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, De Valera took a keen interest in the excavations, and he insisted on having all the reports sent to him personally. And in 1934, then he set up the unemployment schemes for archaeological research in Ireland, and they complemented the work of the Harvard mission.
And is one of the objects of all of this to counter the kind of simian-type stereotyping of the Irish that you had in American magazines like Harper's Monthly, for example, and British magazines like Punch, for example? Is that part of what we're talking about here, part of what's going on?
Yes, because they were very interested in the connections between the Celts and Northern Europe and the Aryans, and they wanted to establish their roots in old Europe. And actually, in 1939, in Life magazine, they interviewed Ernest A. Houghton. There was a piece about him there, and they said that no baboon-faced Irish men were found during the Harvard survey.
So they're looking to find the noble Celt, is that it?
Yes, they are, and they're trying to establish when the Celts came to Ireland, who were they, and who are their descendants in the modern population.
Now, of course, nowadays, if anybody came here talking using the word Aryan, we would get the heebie-jeebies and we'd run a mile for them. But this is the 1930s. So, 32, Harvard team arrives, begins its research. What are the primary questions that they hoped to answer, and how do they plan to go about finding those answers?
Well, the person that they were associated with in the National Museum was Adolf Marr. So he was very influential in choosing the sites, and he chose Crannog sites. And the reasons he chose Crannog sites were practical and there were political. For practical reasons, Crannog sites are dwellings in lakes and bogs, so there's very good preservative properties. So the likelihood is that you will recover thousands of artefacts. And then for political reasons, the Nazis were very interested in lake dwellings in Switzerland and all over Central Europe because they believed they were the strongholds of the ancient Germanic peoples who were descended from the Aryans.
So therefore, they had at some point come to Ireland. You mentioned Adolf Marr, an excellent director of the National Museum, but also, unfortunately, a Nazi. We'll come back to Marr shortly. Managing the Harvard mission is the anthropologist, you've already mentioned, Ernest Houghton. At the time, he was a renowned, he was an extremely influential figure in the US, but he was a proponent of eugenics. Tell us a little bit about Houghton and his eugenics theories.
Well, eugenics was coined in 1883 and it was the science of better breeding for human beings. And it was coined by Ernest Galton, a cousin of Charles Darwin. Now, Ernest A. Houghton, he was a physical anthropologist and he said himself he wasn't interested in the Nazis because he believed that the unfit from every race should be exterminated and not just the Jewish people.
So, I mean, this is what eugenics essentially was all about. It was about good breeding or correct breeding. And, I mean, it was a very, very prescriptive series of notions or a very prescriptive philosophy, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was. And there was the idea of the noble Celt was sort of a long-headed Northern European white man.
Because Ernest Houghton certainly would not have been interested in seeing the kind of Irish Americans who were represented in Harper's Weekly as simian creatures. He would not have wanted them breeding, would he?
No, no. It was all about selective breeding.
Tell us a bit then about a little bit more about Adolf Marr, as I say, director of the National Museum and apparently an excellent director of the National Museum, very, very good at his job. But unfortunately, he was also Ireland's leading Nazi, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was head of the Nazi Party in Ireland. He came to Ireland in 1927 to take up the position of Keeper of Irish Antiquities. And he was promoted to the position of Director in 1934 by De Valera. Now, technically, the government knew he was a Nazi in 1938. And Frederick Boland, who was from the Department of External Affairs, he described him as the most active and fanatical National Socialist in the German colony here. And Hitler conferred a professorship on him in 1938. And he left then in 1939. But the Americans were well aware that he was involved in Nazi activities because there's correspondence from some of the American archaeologists. For example, from Hallam Movius, who was excavating the Mesolithic sites in the north, he wrote to Marr and said, "Dear Adolf, is your arm tired after being in Nuremberg?"
Yeah, because given Houghton's interest in eugenics, given Hitler's interest in eugenics, you would assume that Houghton and Marr would be soulmates. They were anything but.
Yeah, well, Houghton was against Nazism because he thought it was ruining anthropological science. But at the same time, he was disciplined by the president of Harvard for his own inhuman teachings.
Now, his eugenicist ideas are put into practice by the Harvard mission. They seem to have spent a lot of time travelling around the country measuring skulls and facial features. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, well, they actually went to all 32 counties of Ireland and they examined 12,000 people. And then when they recovered skulls from various sites such as Gallen Priory, they were shipped over to the Peabody Museum because Houghton ran a bone lab there and he had skulls from all over the world.
So they are measuring the skulls of living Irish people. With what end in view? To prove that our foreheads are not at an angle? Was that they were about?
No, it was actually to do with immigration. There was harsh new immigration laws introduced in the 20s. And then there was a lot of anthropological surveys going on all over Europe and Britain. For example, they wanted to find out whether people would be suitable as immigrants. So they were eugenically inspected. And they carried out these surveys, for example, in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Germany, Italy, Great Britain, and Ireland.
And what facial characteristics would be required for you to be a suitable subject for immigration?
Just that it wouldn't look Simian.
Right, so that you would have a flat forehead.
Yes.
A 90 degree forehead, basically.
Yeah.
Amongst other things. Now, apart from anthropology, if you can call it anthropology, I suppose it passed for anthropology at the time, the Harvard team did conduct some actual archaeology. As you say, they were particularly interested in fortified lake dwellings in Cranoaghs, like the Cranoaghs of Lagore near Dunshaughlin in County Meath. And, you know, presumably from what you were saying, it was Marr who directed them towards those areas of archaeological interest.
Yeah, well, most of the funding, which came from a Rockefeller grant and also wealthy Irish Americans contributed to it, was spent on the Cranoaghs, and thousands of artefacts were recovered. And also, all these excavations were extremely significant because the Harvard team brought a new era of scientific archaeology to Ireland. And in terms of their technical expertise and the large scale of the excavations and the scientific reports attached to them, they were actually a resounding success, because those reports, all of them, are still consulted today. And some of the sites have been reassessed, such as Ballandary 1 Cranoaghs, Ballandary 2 Cranoaghs, and the Roman material from Lagore and Carrickmon Fort.
Now, the data is one thing, the conclusions entirely different. So, I mean, yeah, we can still consult the data that they accumulated. Would we necessarily come to the same conclusions now as they did in the 1930s?
Not necessarily, because of the terminology they use, particularly around Celtic, because as far as they were concerned, you had Celtic Christians and Christian Celts. And, you know, that would have been a preconceived idea about the identity of Irish people. But because they were meticulous in the recovery of their data, and it was all cutting edge at that time, it had a huge influence on subsequent archaeologists.
One surprising aspect of all of this is that this was not just some obscure research project. It received a lot of publicity in Ireland, but it also received a lot of publicity in the USA. It was seen as hugely important by the Irish state and also by Irish Americans, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was reported on repeatedly in the newspapers here in Ireland and in America, as you say. And here in Ireland, the person who was responsible for doing the press releases was Adolf Marr. So you would get a lot of headlines like Ancient Celtic Glory and so forth. And an archaeology exhibition was sent over to the Chicago World Fair with some of the items recovered from the Harvard Cranoaghs. For example, there was a Viking gaming board, and there was a bronze lamp, and these were part of a wider exhibition of cultural items, like including facsimiles of the Book of Kells and paintings by Sean Keating and that type of material.
What is the legacy of the Harvard mission? Because they came to look for the noble Celt. They came to find the noble Celt. You would assume that something where the outcome was so predetermined that the research would be invalid or dubious at best.
Well, you could say that about the physical anthropology, because that was completely discredited after the Second World War. But because they brought very innovative scientific techniques to the practice of archaeology, And a lot of Irish people also became involved, say, in the unemployment schemes. Like one notable person would be Sean P. O'Riordan, who carried out a similar, very extensive research project at Loch Gur. And he was a noted field worker, but he went on to be professor of Celtic archaeology in UCD in 1943. And he was considered a major figure in European archaeology. And of course, he trained also the next generation of archaeologists.
I was under the impression that there was quite a bit of evidence, or there were certainly quite a few theories, that we are the Irish, we are not Celts. So did the Harvard mission actually teach us anything much about the Celts, about who the Celts were and how Celtic the Irish are?
Well, I think it was in 2006 that Barry Raftery, who was the professor of Celtic archaeology, said there's simply no evidence for invasion of Celts. But in reality, his own father, who had been director of the National Museum, he said back in 1930s something similar. He didn't say it quite bluntly, but he already knew that back then.
Yeah, I'm sure De Valera wouldn't particularly wanted to hear that from the director of the National Museum in the 1930s, would he?
Well, the director of the National Museum in the 1930s, of course, was Adolf Marr, so he wouldn't be saying that. That was known in the 1930s. By other archaeologists, but
so,
it wasn't
so
something
basically
you could
we didn't
say.
Really learn much from the Harvard mission about whether we are Celts or whether we're not Celts.
No, and yet we learned a huge amount about our past, if you like, because it was very innovative. As I said, those reports are still used today.
Okay, so despite
So like you see, it's one thing to have the actual ideology and to be choosing sites because of your ideology, and it's another thing to recover the data in a meticulous way.
It's just that when you have a particular ideology, oftentimes when you are assembling data, you are ignoring certain types of data. But presumably if the data survives, including the data that you're ignoring, it still has a certain value.
Oh yeah, it does, because people can come back and they can establish the facts. Even if you have been sort of ignoring it a bit in your report, if you actually recover it correctly. And also the scientific reports at the time were cutting edge for the time.
Well, Mairead, thank you very much indeed for joining us on The History Show to talk about that remarkable project, the Harvard Archaeological Mission to Ireland, although there's a lot of anthropology, as you say, in there, as well as archaeology. And Mairead's 2018 book on the subject is called The Quest for the Irish Celt, and it's published by Irish Academic Press. After the break, we'll be looking back to the 14th century to find out why the Pope moved from Rome to Avignon in modern France. Stay with us.